Welcome back to the Disciple Makers podcast. Today we are joined by some Disciple Makers alumni, and we'll be talking about life after college. The post-graduation transition can be challenging and even scary at times, so we wanted to talk with some actual alumni to ask them about their experience and give them an opportunity to share advice from their journey. Regardless of whether you are a graduating senior or a younger college student, or maybe you're already living in the quote-unquote real world, we hope that this episode will have something for you to take away and apply. So please join us as we discuss life after college on the Disciple Makers podcast. Hey everybody, welcome back to the podcast. My name is Caleb Olszewski, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Sarah Evans.
Hello, hello.
Today we are joined by Adam Smolensky and Christiana Martin, who are both Disciple Makers alumni. How's it going, guys?
Good. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, happy to be here.
So as many of our seniors have just graduated or about to, today we're talking about life after college, which is why we have some of our esteemed alumni on. And we're really grateful to have Adam and Christiana here today to share their experiences with us. So before we jump into the questions we have for you guys and the topics we'll be touching on, maybe you could just help us get to know each of you a little bit, share where you graduated, when you graduated, and kind of where you guys are at work-wise right now.
Okay, yeah. So I graduated in 2018 from Shippensburg University. Right now, I am a Bible teacher at Harrisburg Christian Academy in Linglestown, Pennsylvania.
I graduated from Gettysburg College in 2013. So 7 years out, I spent the first four working in a post-bac position, and now I am 3 years into grad school.
Awesome. Yeah, so Sarah and I obviously are college graduates as well, so we'll be sharing our thoughts. In addition to you guys, we both graduated in 2015. I went to Kutztown, and Sarah went to Gettysburg as well, along with Christiana, so that's fun.
Go Bulls!
To just kind of jump off our first question here, what is, now that you guys have been out in the real world, some for a short amount of time, some for a long amount of time, what's one thing you wished you knew about the real world before you graduated that you have since found out?
I think something for me was the way relationships would change, and particularly the way that building new relationships would change. Gettysburg, and I think like college in general, you start at this new place and there's hundreds or thousands of other new people looking to find their place and build community. And then suddenly you're not the new kid anymore, but there's this new incoming class. And there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of new relationship building, but it looks really different in college, at least for me, than it did post-college. There's never been a time in the various moves or job changes that I've made where there's been that same kind of momentum of a huge group of people all kind of in the same place relationally. So usually now when I move or, you know, start something new, I'm one or maybe one of a few new people, and most of the new folks around already have relationships, already have connections that, you know, sort of changes the way that relationship building looks.
Yeah, absolutely. And even just like the proximity has changed, right? Like people are not across the dorm, or you don't have maybe as many roommates or whatever anymore. I've certainly found that as well. That like not only is everyone in the same life season and you have all these things in common and everyone is looking to make friends because they don't know anyone. But also, yeah, that proximity thing is huge as well. And it takes a lot more effort to like schedule time with someone that already has a busy life going on to try to build a relationship with them.
How about you, Adam? What's one thing that you wish you knew?
Well, I think, this is kind of a hard question for me because I felt kind of prepared in my unpreparedness, if that makes sense. I knew that as soon as I left, I was going to get smacked in the face, and that I was going to have to figure things out kind of on the fly.
Right.
I guess just probably the best thing was learning to have that attitude of like being able to just keep flowing through obstacle after obstacle and figure things out. So I guess if there was one thing that I wish I could have had, it would have been how to better have that attitude sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. I think one thing I wish I had known, and I think I sort of knew, but had wished I thought about it longer, it was just how long it would take to form relationships. Like, friendships deepen when you're in the same situation. You know, in college, you're like, oh, we're all thrown in this together. We're all away from home. Kind of what you're talking about, Christiana. Like, there's this openness and this expectation. And then after college, well, first of all, I moved to Lancaster, PA. And Lancaster's a very interesting place in that on the one hand, there's a lot of international people. And on the other hand, there's a lot of like Mennonites that have been here for 300 years. And so, you know, like there's a lot of people that they're like, we've been here for 10 generations. And so they're very established and they kind of have their friends and they kind of have their community. And not that I begrudge them for that, but when I first moved, I wondered, where do I fit in with this? And I think I had this idea like, well, I'm going to start neighbor ministry and it's going to be great. And, you know, Keith and I, especially after we got married, we were like, we're going to have a barbecue and we're going to invite our whole neighborhood and everybody's going to come. And only two families came out of probably like 16. But interestingly, they were the two international families. And so they had come from cultures that are more hospitable, maybe. I don't know if that's a good way to say it. But so we just had to learn to shift and adjust our expectations of one, relationships just take a long time, especially if you're in a community where it feels like other people are established. It probably took a good like year or two for me to feel like I actually really knew people. And two, I wish I had learned earlier, just roll with whoever is responding, you know, like rather than trying to like be the hero of the neighborhood, just build relationships with whoever is responding. And it might be an unlikely person that you're not expecting. One thing I would love to know is, even as you were students and even Adam, you mentioned you felt like you were prepared a little bit. Was there anybody in your life as a student that gave you advice that was helpful that you then put into practice?
Oh my gosh. I have to give a huge shout out to Andy Cimbala. I mean, he was on us as seniors. At least I felt about like what life after college is going to look like. Here's some helpful things, some tips and pointers. I mean, I can't thank him enough for some of the advice that he gave me. And it, like, he would tailor it too. Like, I was getting married right after I graduated. So he pulled me aside one time and was like, hey, here's some stuff just about marriage that you ought to know before you go. And I remember LT meetings, like, here is what the real world looks like after college. Like, you seniors, get ready because it's coming.
Yeah, that's great. And yeah, I know for myself, I really resonate with what you've been saying, Adam, in terms of having that attitude of knowing that things are going to smack you in the face is really helpful. Like, just a good expectation to walk in with, knowing that I don't really know how this is going to go, but I'm just going to assume that it's going to surprise me in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah, I was chuckling as you said that, because Adam, nobody really sat me down before I graduated. I had friends the year above and was sort of like looking at their life and seeing the ways that things had changed. But the only conversation that I remember really distinctly was with Andy Cimbala, who was not my staff worker, but was dating his now wife, who is my best friend. And so spending time together, and he and I had really helpful conversations about finding a church, because that was something that he had already done several times as he had moved campuses, and not something that I had done really intentionally in college at Gettysburg. It just sort of fell into going to this church and it made perfect sense and I was there. So yeah, having conversations with him about what that process looked like was really helpful for me moving forward with that for myself.
Yeah. So basically, that a boy, Andy, well done.
Yeah. Go talk to Andy if you need any advice.
Yeah, we're done now. One of the reasons I particularly wanted you to come on, Christiana, is because you were a junior when I was a freshman. So you were 2 years older than me, and then you graduated, and you came back our senior year, and we had like a sit down on the bullet hole patio, which is like an eatery on campus. And you sat us all down and you talked really intentionally with us. And that meant a lot to me because I hadn't kept like that much in contact with you other than just like Facebook. Let's see what's going on. And it was very helpful for me. One of the things that you said was, you often see people in the wilderness in a time of transition. So you talk about Jesus is in the wilderness for 40 days, you know, in between his kind of upbringing and going out into his ministry. And I remember you saying, often you will think that your college years were some of the best of your life. You might not think that the year or two after are some of the best of your life, but it is transition that God will use, and God will build into you things that he's calling you to do. And that was really helpful for me because, you know, my senior year, all the things I thought were going to happen sort of went away. So like I thought I was going to be getting engaged, and then that didn't happen. I had put literally my whole life into pursuing a dream of grad school, and I had like good grades, and I got rejected everywhere. And I remember on graduation day, feeling like, what is the point of this? Like, I have these honors for a major that nobody's going to hire me for, apparently, or let me go to grad school for. And I was really disappointed. And I just remembered that. And then, I mean, I don't need to get into all of this necessarily, but I did not see myself working for DM. I, you know, went through some other things first. But that was really helpful encouragement to me to remember, yeah, it might feel like wilderness, but that doesn't mean that God has abandoned me in the wilderness. So I really appreciated you coming back and taking the time to sit us down and talk to us.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that, Sarah. And I wonder for the others of you guys, like were there kind of like dips and turns in the road, like after college of things you didn't expect or ways you ended up in a different spot than you had originally planned or anything like that?
Absolutely. I mean, dips, unexpected twists, yes, like all about that. I think when I look at my life now, what's happened, where I am sort of, at least in terms of career-wise, where I was aiming for, I really have, by the grace of God, ended up where my original goal was. But I can tell you for sure, the timeline was not the one that I had intended. And that a lot of those seasons of waiting for something that I wanted, not seeing the fruit in that, feeling really frustrated, like those were those were themes that kind of ran through a lot of years, but also were really fruitful. So even I think if you look at the big picture where I am now, I wanted to go to grad school and here I am in grad school. But the work that I'm doing, like the research that I'm focused on, is so different than I thought I wanted when I was a senior. And if I hadn't had those times where things didn't go the way that I had anticipated, I wouldn't be here. Even if like big picture here looks like Christiana succeeded in the goals, like no, God took me on a different route and has been, yeah, really gracious to give me some of those desires, but definitely not the way I anticipated. And others, you know, still waiting on or haven't turned out the way that I had anticipated.
Yeah, I would 100% echo that, Christiana and Sarah. Like, nothing went the way I expected in the last months of college and the like year and a half after I was out. I went to school to be in education. I went to be a social studies teacher. And by the end of my senior year, I was at the point of like, do I really want to do this? And I remember leaving graduation day and thinking like, man, I made a mistake. I don't want to be a teacher.
Wow.
I want to find something else that I can do with this or just find some other way out. And that would go back and forth. Like I found a different job that was nothing like teaching. I would go back and forth on, do I want to commit to something like this, or do I want to like lean back into it? Eventually I did, and I was substitute teaching, and I debated even during that, like, is this still it? Do I want to try and do something in ministry? And now I'm teaching at a Christian school as a Bible teacher, and I have this blend of both that I did not expect, anticipate, or even really look for at the beginning, and I love it. So it's just the ups and downs. It's crazy.
Yeah, that's so encouraging. And I love what you guys are saying, that like, though there were dips and turns, it's really exciting that both of you can see now, and I'm sure Sarah would say the same, that like, you know, now you look back on all those things that have happened and you can really see how the Lord was working in those things. I think two passages of scripture come to mind that kind of echo what you guys are saying. Classic one, Proverbs 16:9, the heart of a man plans his way, but the Lord establishes his steps. That, you know, we may have plans, but ultimately the Lord is kind of, I think of it as he's kind of picking up our feet and putting them down, like where he wants us to go. And in addition to that, I love Psalm 33 for a number of reasons, but in particular, it in verse 10 says, the Lord brings the counsel of the nations to nothing. He frustrates the plans of the people. The counsel of the Lord stands forever, the plans of his heart to all generations. Just this idea that if there's one thing we can count on, it's the Lord will frustrate our plans, but that ultimately his plan is gonna win out at the end of the day. So I just love that you guys are sharing those things. Maybe to loop back to one thing that you guys had mentioned is this idea of church. I know some of our listeners and myself included have grown up in the church. They just kind of went to the church their parents did, and then in college they maybe had to find a new one. But I'm sure there are a lot of students that are listening that, you know, maybe their family isn't Christians or whatever, and so in college they had to go through finding a church for the first time, but they had the support of their fellowship alongside them, and they could just kind of go where their friends were going. Now you may move to some place you don't know, in a new city or a new state, new country even, and you're left there trying to find Christian community. What does that process look like for you guys? What challenges and maybe encouragements have you seen along the way in that process for each of you?
Yeah, I am almost a hybrid of those things. The two descriptions of a student you just gave. I did grow up in the church, you know, family church that everyone had, my mom's like grandparents went to, you know, and was really eager to go to college and have the opportunity to find a church that was a good fit for me spiritually. And then Disciple Makers just like blew my mind, and the soil was fertile and like amazing things happened. And then initially, immediately after college, I moved back to my hometown. So I had this kind of dual situation of, oh yeah, the family church is still here. And also I feel really strongly that it's important for me to be in like Bible believing, exegetical preaching. Like I wanted a different church than the one that I had grown up in. And I loved the people there, loved Jesus. And so kind of had to walk that line between, in some ways, like turning away, or not really turning away, but kind of lovingly expressing that I cared for the people there, but that I wanted to be in a different church. And that was really challenging, just on a personal family level for me. And then sort of in addition to that, of course, yeah, the actual process of finding a church is, can be challenging. And there's definitely, Andy Cimbala has a lot of wisdom about that, but yeah, definitely some things that I learned along the way, and have done that several times now as I've moved to different places. So that the actual finding of a church continues to be a skill that I wish I didn't need, but I'm glad that I can exercise when necessary. And then, yeah, there can be some emotional stuff that goes with that too.
Yeah. So I think a lot of that is so true. And I've a little different experience because we, after getting married, my wife and I, we did not move to either of our hometowns. We picked a place that was the best I can liken it to is like a no man's land for both of us. It wasn't close enough to Shippensburg where we both went that we could go to church with our community there. Like we knew the disciple makers there. They found a good church. That was one we could trust. It was good. Hannah, my wife, she lived in Greencastle, which was way too far of a drive from Carlisle where we live to go to a church there. And we were too far from my hometown to go to a church there. So we were in this no man's land to where we had to find our own. And we, neither of us had really ever been in any circles that run here. So we spent a long time. I think we spent about 7 months just almost every Sunday going to a different church to try and find one that we liked. And the thing that really settled it for us was when we found one, and this is going to sound a little sad, but when we found one that said, please turn in your Bibles to page whatever, that was a flag for us. That was like, man, they have something different that we haven't found yet. So finding that and then actually some good teaching from there, some good wisdom, that was kind of our like, okay, might not have all of our preferences, but they have the wisdom that we need for us to grow.
Yeah, I think that is great what you're saying. It might not have all of our preferences. I was texting with another friend who's an alum the other night and just asking her some questions. I've just been taking like a straw poll among friends. And one of the things she was saying was, it's a common misconception that you have to find the perfect church, that, you know, you can stay in the church hopping phase kind of forever, indefinitely. But at some point, like you do have to commit, put down roots, like that we're called to be committed to God's people. And so, yeah, thinking about what are the core, like they have to preach the gospel. Do they have a vision for disciple making? And then what are more preferential things, and to realize that you might not end up in a church that has all your preferences, but you got to pick at some point. I think that's really helpful. Also, one of our Christiana and my professors at Gettysburg, Todd Neller, he used to always tell us, when you're looking for a job, look for churches at the same time. And if there's not a church, don't take the job. And I think that was really wise. A few years after I started working with DM, I did have the opportunity to pursue going back to grad school, and I pretty seriously considered it. It was like a really great program, but there was not a church in like an hour and a half drive. And even like when I just went up to visit, just observing like the culture, even the people I met around me, and I, you know, I ended up just feeling like this is not going to be good for me to be out here kind of by myself. And sure, you could justify it's only a few years, but there's more reasons why, but I ended up not going. And a big reason why was because there was just no Christian community. And I think even in kind of alumni that I've watched, I have seen a difference between the ones that have gotten plugged into a local church and the ones that haven't. And not saying that anybody's like lost their faith or anything or walked away necessarily, but it's hard after you graduate, and having a Christian community that can help you process that makes a ton of difference.
Absolutely. And I appreciate you guys each kind of sharing what those experiences have looked like for you. Christiana, I know you said you've done this a number of times. I'd be curious to hear, like, what are some of those practicals? I know, Adam, you shared a few with us of, you know, like just open your Bibles and let's actually look at the scripture. I think that's great. What are some of these other kind of practical things that you guys have looked for that when you see them, you're like, oh, wow, like this is where I should be. What have been some of those things for you?
I really appreciate the you're never going to find everything. So figure out what's most important for you. And this looks a little bit different for somebody as a single person. I only have to take my own preferences into account. And so this can look different for a couple when you're moving to a new place and maybe have some different preferences. But there are some things that I know I need and some things that are really helpful and some things that like would be great, but it's icing on the cake. The really crucial, I mean, kind of what Sarah had laid out already, right? Like, do they clearly preach the gospel? Like, is the gospel coming out of the mouths of not just the pastors from the front of the church, but like from the leadership regularly? The second one for me is how particularly the pastors, but kind of in the context of the church, how do they handle the word? Like, how do they teach the Bible? For me, I would love, but do not have time to commit significant time into studying the Bible. And so it matters so much to me that I'm getting that on Sunday morning from the pastor. And I know other people that's not really going to serve them spiritually in the same way. The preaching style maybe can be more emotive or like topical, works really well for them. For me, the preaching matters, and like how the preaching is done matters a lot. And then the third one that I didn't realize the first time was so important to me, but has become clear on number three, is community. And not necessarily like, do they value community, because most people at least say they do, and not like, is community happening, because it is. But I think really, what is the nature of that community, and how eager are people to build community, like at the grassroots level? And that's something that you really can't see well as an outsider. It takes some like trust and like, okay, no red flags, so I'm just going to move forward and hope for the best there. But that one, at least for me, being in a community where not just Sunday morning, but like on a weekly basis, I can build relationships with people who are going to point me to Jesus, is just so crucial.
Yeah, I think that that community one, Christiana, is super huge. And that was what came to mind first for me, just because when we... like, to illustrate the point, when we had like kind of narrowed down our options of choices, we had one in our area that was just really big, and there were a ton of people that went there. Like every week they had two services that were packed and like an overflow room for each of them. And then the other option was a church that was a little bit smaller, actually significantly smaller. They had one service, not really like an overflow room or anything. But what made the difference for us was when we would go to the bigger church, service would happen, teaching was good, lots of wisdom, good theology, everything. And then people would, for the most part, leave. Like the place would be emptied pretty quickly, try to beat traffic or whatever it was. And then our other church, our current church, something that stood out to us was that after the service, people would stop and they would talk, and I would like, you could see people go from one side of the church to the other just to meet like one person, just to get to talk to them. And that was just a sign to us that like, hey, this community is alive. And if we're going to find a community that's willing to invest in us and help us grow in our faith, it's probably going to be here, is where we're going to have the best chances.
Yeah, that's great. That's really helpful for both, you know, our graduating seniors, but even current students. Just finding a good church is really important. Maybe for the next question, we can talk about, what did the Lord teach you during those first few years of transition, maybe like 1 to 3 years after graduating? And were there any scriptures that really resonated with you that you can recall as you have transitioned out of college and into the real world?
Yeah, trying to dredge back. That feels like a long time ago. What scripture was resonating with me? There's so many good ones. I think for me, the first couple years out, and this has continued to be true, but particularly the first couple of years out of school, was a lot of waiting and a lot of wrestling with contentment versus discontent. And when you dig deeper into discontent, that can really go in a lot of different ways, hope and like faith in God and connection. But for me, yeah, just seeing a lot of hopes and dreams that I had, and the answer was wait, Or, you know, I wasn't getting a clear answer. And so the answer was wait. And some of those still are, I'm still waiting. So wrestling with that, and you can kind of think of it as a wilderness. It's not always, but being in a place that's not bad, there's a lot of gifts and blessings and like good parts of that season. But at the same time, I wasn't where I wanted to be. And I was seeing everybody else, you know, I'm seeing the highlight reels of everyone else. And so lots of weddings and lots of grad school and jobs and like all these wonderful things happening and trying to rejoice with my friends while dealing with kind of my own feelings, primarily towards the Lord. So like, do I get what I want more quickly now? No. Is this a thing that I'm still learning? Yes. But I feel so much more content than I did then. And so I guess that's what was happening. I will say, at least for me, that when I was in college, I was learning and growing and everything felt like it was moving really quickly. Like I would realize God was convicting me of sin and or like he was sort of bringing to mind something that I didn't understand. And those felt like they piled up quickly and growth was happening quickly. And then I got out and it was like everything had slowed way down and I felt like I wasn't growing. And in retrospect, this contentment and like faith that the Lord is good in periods of waiting or frustration or whatever it is, like that is something that needed to be learned slowly. I couldn't learn it fast, but I definitely was frustrated that I wasn't just like, I'm in this new situation. All of these new things are happening. Why am I not just learning and growing so fast? So there are two scriptures, I think, that they still are helpful to me, but I think were helpful then too. One of them is from Psalm 27. And the end of Psalm 27, this is David like crying out to the Lord and talking about sort of his enemies and trusting in him and dwelling in the house of the Lord. Like there's a lot really rich going on at the beginning. But the end of that psalm, verses 13 and 14 says, I believe that I shall look upon the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. Wait for the Lord, be strong and let your heart take courage. Wait for the Lord. And really that verse 13, I believe that I shall look upon the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living was so like, I still need to remind myself of that, that I had seen the goodness of the Lord like David had, like there had been mountaintop moments. And then I'm in this sort of not a whole lot is going on. I don't feel like there's a whole lot of goodness, but really believing not just that my salvation is assured and that I have reason for joy when things are, you know, trials big and small, but really that like God is good. And so even if I'm not seeing his goodness right now, like I am going to see his goodness was really, has been really helpful. The other thing for me, I think I did this right around the end of my college years. I one day in a fit of whatever, I grabbed a whole bunch of index cards and just wrote down lies that I was believing. And then later went back and really looked for scripture to refute them. So that when I was feeling that way, like I didn't have to remember, I could just look and it was there. And one of those, so apparently I've been dealing with this since college, but was that this is the best life is ever going to get, or like this is the happiest that I'll ever be. That fear that like, yeah, God is really good now, but he's going to run out of grace for me. Like I've gotten good things and now I'm going to have to pay for it somehow by trudging along in misery, which is not God's character. So to sort of refute that, I went back to 1 Peter 5, 6, and 7. Therefore, humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you in due time, casting all your cares upon him, for he cares for you. And that juxtaposition of being humble under a mighty God, not just to be humbled, but because part of his plan is exaltation, but then really that he cares for you. Like, those are two really different ideas, but they go together so nicely, and have been really great for me.
Wow, man, that was a lot of wisdom to take in. Like, the difference between our graduation dates is just like, I want all of the wisdom that I can get. I got married right out of college, and I think that the Lord really used that just as a mirror in some ways. He really used my marriage to show me where I needed to improve myself. There's plenty of times that my wife, who is my best friend and the best wife I could ask for, she holds the mirror up to me and says, look at what you're doing right now. It's not great. And she kind of gives me that little push in whatever moment to be more like Jesus. And we do that for each other, and we look out for each other. And I think that the value or the takeaway that I can get from that is like, okay, yeah, like, not everyone leaves college and gets married right away, but find a good friend, find a mentor, a counselor, someone that you can put your trust in that is going to hold the mirror up to you and be like, all right, this isn't great, because we can't do it on our own. Our own wisdom is not enough. And then I think the second biggest thing is probably learning balance. Not realizing how much time that I had to, like, that was available to me in college. I could do a lot of different things, and it was easier. I could manage them because I just didn't have as much going on. Being on the real world, learning to balance, like, just everything, meals, job, friends, learning to say no to some things to keep the balance and not run myself ragged and until I have nothing. Because if you don't learn the balance and you try to do everything, eventually you'll come to the point where you can do nothing because you're exhausted and you've just run out of fuel for everything else that actually needs your attention. So that moderation, learning where to put the throttle after I left school, was a big adjustment with everything that I had.
Yeah, I love what you were saying, Adam, about like finding a mentor and things like that. Our ministry is super focused on discipleship, disciple making. Obviously, we're called disciple makers. And so for you guys after college, obviously in college, you had a fellowship and you had staff workers that were meeting with you regularly. You guys probably were leading Bible studies and things like that with other students. What has that looked like? What has both your individual ministries looked like in making disciples? And also, what does it look like trying to find those mentors or disciplers or things like that outside of school?
Yeah, the ministry opportunities, if you would think of them that way, that I've had since college have been the long haul. Like, for a season, moving back home to a place where a number of my family are believers and have different theological backgrounds and beliefs, but some of them aren't, people that I love really dearly and have known for a really long time, that we have really entrenched relationship patterns. But like, I want to love them in a way that shows them the love of Jesus. And then moving into, at least for me, all of my work situations, I have been pretty much just like by myself in terms of having believers around. And that's been the case too, at least when I moved for grad school. I was living in an apartment with three other and sort of cycled through several other roommates. And so lots and lots of people in my life who were sort of available for the harvest, but like so not interested. And that looks different, you know, than when you're on campus and you're praying that the Lord's going to put somebody in your path and you see someone who's open or low hanging fruit and you like go for it. This is instead me trusting that the Lord loves people that I love, these relationships that I've built, that He loves those people more than I love them. And that I can trust that he's good as I pray for him to soften hearts. And I just try to live in a way that makes those gospel conversations possible for the times that someone is open.
Yeah, I love that. The idea of having integrity across the board and consistency in word and deed. Something I've found, you know, I do work in ministry full time. And so in one sense, disciple making hasn't really changed. But then in another sense, I think neighbor ministry has just been interesting. And the one thing I've found, and even again, texting with the friend I was texting with, she said the same thing, just being honest in interactions and taking the risk and seeing if the conversation goes somewhere. So even when somebody says, how are you? Give like a genuine answer. And when you ask them how they're doing, let them know, like, no, for real, I want to know how you're doing. And as Keith and I have done that over the years with our neighbors, it's been really interesting to see who responds, because it's not like who we thought it would be. But also it's just in faith, believing that if I take this next risk or this next chance, maybe the Lord will use it. And just being very honest in conversations and not censoring myself. You know, so in ministry, I'm like, yeah, I was just at a Bible study. This is what we talked about. What have you been up to? And seeing where that goes, I think is a really helpful discipleship skill. Sometimes you talk about lead with vulnerability, you know, this idea of be honest in your interactions, talk about it. Don't censor the gospel or what you're doing as you follow the Lord, and you don't know what that will stir up.
Absolutely. I know for me, kind of on the topic of finding those disciplers, finding those mentors in church, I think similarly, it's just felt long in terms of building those relationships with people. And I'd love to hear you guys pipe in as well. But it's taken me like having to like go and ask an elder, like, hey, like, would you meet with me regularly? And we can like talk and we could go through this book and that kind of a thing. For you guys that are in school right now, and you may have a staff worker investing in you and taking the initiative with you every week, that's usually not how the rest of the world works in terms of church ministry, as much as we would love to say that it is. And there are totally exceptions to that. Yeah, I think on the whole, I would encourage you guys to like go out expecting that you're going to have to take the initiative with that. Have you guys seen that be true for you as well?
Yeah, absolutely. Initiative being the key word. I think I've experienced that kind of in different ways, churches with different perspectives, or I think even just people with different background experiences in what that's looked like. And being clear about like what you're looking for, and not just in the mentee role, but also coming into the church and recognizing that there are younger people or other believers who you can play a mentorship role in the way that in disciple makers, we have kind of a common language to talk about it and kind of common expectations and a culture of what it looks like. And that has not been the case. I mean, you know, it varies, but overall that has not been the case. And so, yeah, being really bold to say, this is what I'd like. Would you be willing to do this? That has felt like a big ask. And sometimes I haven't taken the initiative for a long time. I wanted it to just happen. And then like after months and months, well, like, let me do something about it. So definitely like looking back, if I could have done that differently, just going for it out of the gate and being like, this is in either respect, right? Whether what you're looking for is a believer who can disciple you, or looking for a way that you can plug into the church and be a person who's doing that. I think both are really great. And, 100% wish that I was always just like super upfront and bold, but I can feel like I'm being needy, right? But like I need something and nobody else seems to be doing it. And so I don't want to ask more of the leadership who are already working. And so like those thoughts can be really inhibiting. And if I could go back and talk to my younger self, I would want to fight through that and be more clear. I think both in terms of what I could be doing for the church, as well as what I'd like to be getting out of discipleship relationships.
Yeah. And the worst thing that they can say is no. They can't exile you from the church or send you out onto the street. And then you just check off that one name from the list. It's like, okay, I'll check out maybe another church leader. I would 100% echo that. There is, no matter how you cut it, no matter how close you are to the person, there's still like that moment of like you taking the intentional action of like either just like asking for it or saying like, hey, can we do this? Can we, you know, go get breakfast once a month or every couple of weeks or whatever you want to do. But that has been the common theme that I've seen is like, no matter the context, it's like you have to take some level of initiative. And like coming from the worship leader at Shippensburg, and then like handing that off as I exited, I went to my church and I spent a long time not on the worship team at all. And I was just kind of waiting and waiting, like, maybe it'll just kind of fall in my lap. And it did not. I had to take the initiative and be like, hey, you're the worship leader. I can play guitar. I would like to help you if you need it on some Sundays. And then it happened. But it took that moment of me being like, okay, I'm going to actually ask for this. And again, the worst thing he could have said was, no, we don't need help in this way. And when I did actually ask that, the answer was a half no. Like, I was most comfortable singing and playing acoustic guitar. And now I am like the super support role with my electric guitar. I play like a couple nice little pieces in the songs every now and then. And I get some single strung songs every once in a while, but like, I am not the upfront guy anymore. And it's still great, but it was like, yeah, that was the worst case scenario, was still positive.
Yeah, I love what you guys are saying, that you have to take initiative both in looking to be poured in and in looking to, okay, you've been given a lot of skills. How can you put them in place? Because your church is not going to know that necessarily. They're not going to, you know, unless you're going back to a church you've already been involved in. The other thing I would say is to really take advantage of whatever your church does have. You know, sometimes we can talk about, do we need to create this discipleship culture if it's not there? But take advantage of what your church does have. And so our church has small groups. And so we kind of looked around and we looked at, there's a one small group that was led by one of the elders and his wife. And we just really respected that guy and his wife. And so we were like, we want to be in their small group, because it was them and they're in their 60s. And then every other couple was sort of in their like 30s to mid 20s. And so most people were older than us. And we were like, that's the group we want to be in. So we approached them and we're like, can we be in your group? And they said, yes. And so that's been very helpful. And so to be in that small group, but then also to really make the most of it. Again, sometimes even in small groups, it's easy to show up and just say like a Christian answer, this is what I learned in the sermon this Sunday, and not be real and vulnerable. Like, don't do that. You can really shape a culture by how you talk and engage. And so even in our small group, some people are our same age, a lot of people are slightly older. That's been a big blessing for us in both like spiritual discipleship, but also practical. Like, a lot of them are parents. Like, this is what you do when your toddler is a mess. And that's helpful too. That's discipleship.
Absolutely. And I think I've found the same thing to be true in my church. Yeah, the small group ministry has been huge. And yeah, I would encourage you guys as well. Yeah, find community that is people your own age, you know, that I think that's helpful at a church, especially if you're single. But yeah, equally find people, you know, if there's a small group of a bunch of like parents and stuff, and you're not even married yet, or you are about to get married or whatever, like, that's so helpful. Like, if God has that in store for you, you're going to have like years of just getting to watch how they do things as a couple or as a family to think about. I think even this kind of goes back to our conversation about like finding a good church and stuff, but I think you guys are really drawing it out here. A big thing to look at is just the leadership of the church beyond just the pastor, in terms of like, what is their heart for shepherding the flock? I was thinking of 1 Peter 5. It is addressed to elders, and it calls them to, in verse 2, shepherd the flock of God that is among you, exercising oversight, not under compulsion, but willingly, as God would have you, not for shameful gain, but eagerly, not domineering over those in your charge, but being examples to the flock. And when the chief shepherd appears, you will receive the unfading crown of glory. Likewise, you who are younger, be subject to the elders. Clothe yourselves, all of you, with humility towards one another, for God opposes the proud, but gives grace to the humble. And so as you enter a church, you'll be putting yourself under the authority of those leaders and elders or deacons that are there, that are kind of the church authority structure. And you should investigate, who are those people? Like, what do you think about the way that they interact with you or others as you're visiting these churches? Don't just try to meet the pastor, try to meet some of the other key leaders as well. And you know, maybe the church does not have, you know, a straight up, you know, one-on-one discipleship program in the same way that your Disciple Makers Fellowship does, but do they have a heart to shepherd the flock? Like, do you see that desire in the elders that you talk to, in the leaders of a men's or women's ministry that you connect with, in the Sunday school leaders that might be there? Is there a desire to raise up and equip disciples? And that's something that you guys can really be looking out for. And as you identify those people, those are probably the people that you'll want to go and initiate with if you want to meet with somebody regularly or something like that, or if you wanted to start a Bible study or something yourself. Like, those are the kind of people that you want to connect with.
Yeah. Maybe we, with our last few minutes, we can take a moment just to address the senior listening now. As I think about, it always feels uncertain when you're graduating, but now in the midst of lockdown and quarantine, even job searching has been thrown off and different things like that seem uncertain. So in a moment, I'd love to ask you guys what advice you have. But even first, something I've been thinking about, I'm very type A. I knew what I wanted to do since I was in fourth grade. Like, I am insane, an overachiever. And to graduate without having a job or a grad school acceptance felt like the most utter and complete failure. I just felt like I had let everybody down, and I didn't have a job, and I didn't know what I was supposed to do with my life. And that was really hard. And somewhere along that time, somebody had pointed me to Hebrews 11, verse 8. It says, "By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to a place that he was to receive as an inheritance. And he went out, not knowing where he was going." And I had never noticed that before, that God had just been given, God gave Abraham very vague directions, and Abraham took what he knew and he moved forward in it. And so someone had said to me, you know, if you wake up and you're obeying the Lord and you're following his will, and you're just taking opportunities as they come, and you go to sleep and you've been obeying the Lord, he's going to direct your steps, and you're going to end up where he wants you. And so that was really helpful, because there was a pretty solid year after I graduated where everything I was pursuing wasn't working, and the doors he was opening was not the ones I wanted. And so, especially for the senior listening right now, if you don't have a job, the Lord has not abandoned you. If you're not sure what the season is going to look like, the Lord has not abandoned you. And Abraham followed in faith and didn't know where he was going, and that was okay. And so I'd love to know if you guys have any final thoughts, even speaking to the senior right now who's listening.
Yeah, something that comes to mind is kind of kept coming up as we've been talking. I just keep thinking of James 1, verses 2 and 3. It says, "Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance." That hugely defines like just my time after graduation. And I have heard similar things from even my friends. I think another major piece of advice that I could give is for like those in education, and this even applies a little bit to those who are just maybe reconsidering at the end what you're doing. There's hope for either scenario. If you're a teacher or you're in education and you feel like this is where your heart is at, where you want to be, whether it works out or not, there's hope in either scenario. There's someone who never wanted to be a teacher when he graduated. Here I am with a teaching job. I liked it. Vice versa, I could have made it work if I decided I didn't want to be a teacher. I could have gone a completely different direction and it would have been fine. And I still would have been able to glorify the Lord with my life. And that works too. If you're in a different degree or different study entirely, you don't have to do exactly what you plan to do when you graduate. I think you put it very well, Sarah. If it's not in the cards, that's okay. And there are plenty of other doors that you can walk through depending on when the Lord opens them.
Yeah, that's so good. And Sarah, I really appreciate the things that you were saying. It's so true that particularly those of us that come from the achievement-oriented background, those of us who make a decision and stick with it and value tenacity and like, you know, making a decision and like you're going to pursue that goal, it can be so, so challenging to recognize that that's not what you want anymore, that like that was for a season, that desire was for a season, and maybe now God is calling you to something different, or you've learned new things about yourself and you know are kind of taking a different path. I think that can be, it can feel like defeat to admit that, and feel like failure to admit that, but I've seen other alumni who have just walked out like that in humility, and it's so God glorifying. And I think that's true of whatever the next couple of years look like for you. I don't know what job you will have. I don't know what job opportunities you're going to try to get and fail at, but like either way, God is going to be glorified if you're faithful to Him in that. The things that are eternally valuable are assured. Like that is something that can happen. You can be faithful to the Lord. Like you can honor Him as the Lord of your life, regardless of whether the career stuff is lining up the way that you thought you would, or honestly, even like if you're worried about provision and where you're going to live and where your needs are going to come from, there's a way, to walk through this season with your eyes on the process, with your eyes on Jesus, instead of being focused exclusively on that goal and that destination. Something that's come to mind recently in this time of uncertainty, we've been talking in my small group a lot about suffering and God's sovereignty. And something that comes up a lot is that a thorough understanding of God's sovereignty before you experience trials is so helpful. A thorough understanding of God's care for you is so important when you're experiencing that trial. So I guess hopefully you guys are able to hold on to teaching that you have received that can help buoy you through this time and understanding the Lord's purpose when it's hidden from us. But I think in a deeper sense, my hope for you is that you feel a real sense of God's care and love for you. Just you, like because of Jesus, not what you're doing or not what you're, you know, whether you're being faithful to work really hard and try to secure that job, but just like God loves you in the midst of this.
That's so good. And I love particularly you talking about the eternal perspective that can just be so encouraging when we don't know what's around the corner. You know, that in that verse I mentioned earlier from Proverbs, you know, the heart of a man plans his way. I don't know about for you guys, but when I think about planning like a month from now, I'm like, why even bother? Like, I don't know what's going to happen. But yeah, as we look towards our eternal perspective that if we are in Christ, we will spend eternity with Christ. As we think about how to invest even now in the things that we're doing, we have two things that are eternal, the Lord, the Bible, you know, and then people. And so investing in those things now, we're not going to come up short on those things. We may come up short on finding a job. We may come up short on being successful in the short term. But as we invest in the Lord and in people, those are truly going to be with us forever. And that's something that we can really hang our hats on there. So thank you so much, Adam and Christiana, for sharing with us. It's been so encouraging to hear all of your wisdom and experience that you guys have had. And we hope for those of you at home who are listening that this was really encouraging for you, particularly those of you who are seniors, who are finishing out your college career. Our hearts go out to you that you won't get to walk across a stage and receive your diploma and these things. And we encourage you as you lament those things and think through that to look back at some of our previous podcast episodes about those topics and just how to work through that as well. So thanks so much, guys, for joining us, and we'll talk to all of you guys next time. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Disciple Makers podcast. We hope you enjoyed our conversation with Adam and Christiana about life after college, and we hope that their thoughts and advice was helpful for you, especially if you are a graduating senior. As always, we have resources for you in the show notes. Andy Cimbala was mentioned often in the podcast this week, and he gave us some great resources to share with all of you, including his document about finding a good church. Thanks again for listening, and we hope you'll join us next week on the Disciple Makers podcast.